Accession number 19594, Reel 1.
Norman Bryans, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Charlton, Middlesex, a little village near Shepperton.
Which year was this?
1917.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Charlton?
Up to the age of 11. And then we were farmers down there, and things were very bad. So my father and the family moved to Petersfield when I was 11 years old.
Why were things so bad at that time?
Well, the Depression was on, and farming was very, very poor.
Was it a question of prices for the
produce? Yes, definitely.
What was your father attempting to produce?
Market garden stuff, all fruit and vegetables, which we had our own farm down in Shepperton, which we sold before, and then coming to Petersfield.
So what did your father do when he came to Petersfield?
He done the same thing there, but he had an idea, rather than send his stuff to Kewbridge Market, as he did in Shepperton, the idea was that we'd sell it ourselves retail.
And was that more satisfactory?
Oh yes, much more satisfactory, yes.
So you really, your hometown is Petersfield?
Really, yes, because I was only 11 when I came to Petersfield. I'd done my schooling in Petersfield. I'm a teenager until I joined the army in March the 5th, 1940.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
That would have been 31.
That's right, yes.
And what did you do on leaving
school? I went straight to the farm. We bought our own farm then in Petersfield.
What was the name of the farm?
Golden Bull Farm.
And that was Market Garden Project?
Yes, that was Market Garden. And we had a small dairy herd as well. We done had a milk business in those days as well, which we delivered on bicycles and a horse and cart.
And is that what you were doing when war broke out?
Yes, it was.
Had you joined TA before?
No, I never joined. No, I never joined nothing.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
We were actually picking peas. My father and I, the Red Lion Hotel Petersfield, my father's told them that he was picking some lovely peas, which was very late in the year. Anyway, Captain Shields of the Red Lion Hotel said he wasn't interested. Anyway, on this Sunday morning, he phoned down and could he have £20 of peas straight away? As the War Office, and what we found out later was that the War Office was coming down to inspect the defence or make defences on Butser Hill. And they were eating at the Red Lion, so we wanted to give them these peas. And so when we had this order for these peas, my father and I was out picking them, and my dear old aunt come crying down the fields. She said, "It's war, Wilfie." That's my father's name. "It's war, Wilfie." And that's where I was when picking peas when war was declared.
Was your father just as upset as she was?
No, he wasn't at all. And I was rather pleased. You know, we'd had this horrible year before, you know, thinking it was going to be war. Anyway, and all the young bloody fellas like myself were rather pleased as we knew where we stood. And my father, he was with the Royal Hampshires in the First World War.
And did the war affect your business at all?
Oh, yes. First? Not so much at first, because stuff started getting... imports never came in. But it never made... farming went on very well because stuff was wanted more and made stuff more valuable.
And what other effects did the war have on you at first before you joined up?
Well, very little, I should say, very little. Of course, we couldn't get no petrol. That made a difference. Of course, sugar went short straight away. Very quickly, sugar went. You know, within 2 or 3 days, you couldn't buy sugar. But as I say, from then, I joined the army March the 5th, so it wasn't very, very long after the outbreak of war.
Can you tell me about joining the army, please?
Yes, sir. I had a letter from the War Office to say I had to go to the Victoria Rooms, South Sea, for have a medical test. I done that and was passed A1. And then, that was somewhere late February 1940, I had a letter from the War Office again saying that I had to report to Salisbury. And they gave me the times of the trains, and I think I caught the 9:30 from Petersfield to Portsmouth, and there, from there we were really taken over then by the military. From there we went to Salisbury, and there they told us the different battalions or different regiments were going to join. And my name came up, and I was to join the 5th Battalion of the Hampshire Regiment, which was stationed at Shepton Mallet in Somerset.
Had you done basic training yet?
No, nothing at all. No, I just joined. That was the first day, my first day in the army. And we arrived at Shepton Mallet very, very late, on 5th of March 1940. And they lined us up in the outside the drill hall at Shepton Mallet. And in threes, and they marched us through the town, and they bang, bang, bang at the door, different doors, and said, "You're taking two soldiers tonight." Bang, bang, bang. And I went to a Mr. and Mrs. Shaw of Whitston Road, I'll never forget it. And they banged at their door, and they said, "You're taking three men." I says, "Oh, yes, 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 yes." And it was also, first three, myself and a fellow by the name Abramadis or something. He was a Greek or something like that. And myself, and we went there as Mr. and Mrs. Shaw, 51 Whitston Road, Shepton Mallet, which I shall never forget.
So you were just billeted on?
I just billeted, and I was told to report back to the town of the drill hall, where we had tents put up the next day. Well, when we arrived at day, we had our breakfast, and it was very, very cold. There was all marquees. It was ice and snow everywhere, and they had these great big marquees, and that's where we supposed to have slept, was going to sleep for as young soldiers. But the water was, they had standing pipes like that running through the tents where we had a washing in the freezing water. Anyway, they were all frozen, so they couldn't put us under canvas, so we went back to our billets. Like, we went back to Mrs. and Mrs. Shaw of Whitston Road, and we stayed there about another a week or so before we come under canvas properly. We used to go back to our billets at night.
Did these civilians seem to mind?
They loved it. This Mr. Shaw, he was a ex-soldier himself of the First World War, and he thought it was wonderful. And I got on one. He took us to Wells Cathedral and Bath and everywhere. He was a real wonder. In fact, I'll never forget my boots. They hurt so much, of course, I'd never wore big boots before. And he said, "Oh, I'll break them in for you, Norman." And he wore them for a day or two to break them in.
How did his wife feel about
that? Oh, she loved us. She loved us. She loved us.
So she had more than one soldier in the house?
Yeah, there were three of us. Three of us. And as I say, then my brother, who was in the Guards, he came down and gave a demonstration, or they did, the Guards did. And she said, "Oh, fetch Bernard along," she said, and so we made a party at her place with my brother from the Guards and ourselves.
And you did your basic training in Shepton Mallet?
I did my basic, yes. And as I say, there, although, because as going back to our own business, we had our own lorry, so I was a lorry driver, or I could drive a lorry, which not very, very few people in those days could even drive a car. How about a lorry? So, of course, they wanted me as a driver to take her out to drive some of their trucks, because they had trucks still with no drivers there at Shepton Mallet. And, but we had to do our 6 months, where you were infantryman, you have to do your 6 months basic training.
6 months?
Well, I don't think I'd done quite 6 months, but it was quite a, it seemed, a, I think it must have been June before I was allowed to leave finish my training and go on driving properly.
what was the basic training like?
Oh, pretty hard. Route marches and arms drills and map reading, you know, everything you can think of. Oh, we'd done that. It was hard all day long.
And could you cope with it?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yes.
How were you treated by the NCOs in charge?
Well, not too badly, because it was I was joining there. The 5th Battalion of the Hampshire Regiment was a territorial unit. They were all territorials. And this was the first influx I'd had of recruits. So, of course, although they were very, very strict, very, very strict, that, I done all right anyway. And, of course, then the battalion had, then we had embarkation leave to go to France. So, during the embarkation leave, which is March, April, May, I suppose, France gave it, or hadn't quite given in. And our division, which was 43rd, was the one to go to France. And apparently, why we heard at the grapevine, that Winston Churchill says that he wasn't going to sacrifice any more divisions, you know, as a waste corps sent to France. So we went to, so they sent our battalion, or our division in the 43rd Division, as was a fully equipped division, to Royston in Hertfordshire. And we were looking after the Downs there in case the German paratroopers came down, and looking after Droxford Aerodrome and Bazimbourne Aerodrome, where our big bombers was stationed. So we had a job there for a few months.
Did you personally think the Germans would invade?
Oh yes, we all thought so, oh yes. And if I can tell you one little story about Royston, we was going to have it's a Sunday, and we were going to take a truck, fetch a truck home, which three or four of us got together doing, which was really quite common practice. So anyway, we took as we was waiting for, we said after line inspection that Sunday morning, we'd get in the truck and go back to Hampshire, Southampton and Petersfield. So anyway, while we was waiting for the inspection, it was a very long time, the orderly officer was, and anyway, he came along and made things worse. And instead of going through as a Sunday morning, going straight away through the drill of, you know, not, you know, line inspection, he done the job properly, and he picked my rifle up. And he said, Sergeant Major, respect that rifle. And then he said, it's a dirty rifle, so put him on a charge. So anyway, next morning I was on a charge, and the command officer says, what have I got to say? And told me, so I said, usually line inspection, I said, as you know, sir, he's very, very quick on a Sunday morning. But this Sunday morning, I said, it was an hour late. I said, because, I said, the officer commanding the, looking at the billets was done everything properly, sir. So he said, well, what's that to do? I said, well, while we was waiting, sir, I said, we were doing some arms drill, three or four of us was. And I says, hitting the blanco rifle sling on, I said, got on my rifle, made it look dirty. I said, so it wasn't really dirty, it was blanco dust on it. So he took that as good enough for me.
And what were relations like with the people in the Royston area?
Oh, very good. Oh, yes. Oh, well, absolutely 100%. Well, you must remember that the army then was really looked up. You know, everybody thought army personnel was wonderful. You know, they was our saviour. They could only see one saviour, and that was the army. So wherever we went, we was more or less, looked up to, really looked up to, especially in the Royston area.
And were you doing your driving job there?
Yes, then I started driving there, and my first consignment was a ACAC truck. They took me out, and the Mr. Parks, he was the officer commanding the MT, and he asked ordered four of us to go to be tested for driving trucks if it was good enough. Of course, he did. He said to me, you're, and another fellow by the name of Phillips, he said, you're about the two of the best drivers I've ever anyway, this Phillips was a heavy goods licensed fellow, and I had my own license. He said, "You were about the two best drivers I've ever done." So he said, "You should be on the ACAX." So as soon as the German planes come over, anything, our job was to get on the ACAC tracks and take up our positions against the enemy aircraft.
What exactly is an ACAC truck?
It's an ordinary 1500-weight truck with a built-in brain gun on them, with a fare, a chair. And those swivel round, so they could, especially for anti-aircraft.
And how long did this go on for at Royston?
All the while I was at Royston, and then after that was all the while I was at Royston, and then on early November, the whole division then moved to Kent, and we took up all the positions from Herne Bay almost round to Dover, and that was the 43rd Division's. We occupied all that area. So we was at Herne Bay, Burgington, Margate, Ramsgate, Manson. Of course, then we had Manson Aerodrome there then, so he was looking after Manson, as well as the defences. We were guarding Manson Aerodrome as well. That was the 43rd. And well, I must say that while I was at while I was there, we played the RAF Manson football. And we drove there this day in one of our 30-hundred-weight trucks, which I was now a driver of a 30-hundred-weight truck. When you was a driver of a 30-hundred-weight, he was almost the elite, shall we say, the elite drivers. That was the big trucks. Anyway, we went to Manson Aerodrome to play the Royal Air Force football this afternoon. When we got there, I said, "Oh, I don't look as if there's going to be no play." There was aeroplanes scattered all over everywhere, so we asked, "Oh yes, sir, we've only got to push the help push the aeroplanes off the football pitch, and we shall play," which we done. Anyway, we hadn't been playing a half hour, and two Messerschmitts come down, and absolutely machine gunners as we were playing football, and I'm playing outside left, and I threw myself on the ground like this, and I remember seeing all the bullets smattering in the ground in front of me, and I think I hit two Spitfires that day. Anyway, we didn't wait, we got in, we rushed over, we was told to get on our tracks and get away. So that was one little story about Manson Aerodrome.
Had you seen much of the Battle of Britain?
Oh yes, both. We see a lot of it. The Battle of Britain was still going on when we, and we see a hell of a lot of it in Royston, of course.
What did you see in the Royston area?
All the Spitfires and Hurricanes going up against the German planes all the while.
Had you felt confident about the outcome of the Battle of Britain?
Yes, I think so. Oh yes, I don't think we were. I think we thought we would. We did have one. I'll never forget, the Duke of Kent. He come inspected our lines once, and this is how we're down in Kent now, down Manson Aerodrome. And I had a job of the fellow on my track with escort. He jumped off the track and sprained his ankle. So and he was the Duke's personal, was to follow the Duke around. So I said, "You stop at the track." I said, "I'll do it." So the Duke, he looked round at some of our weapon pits, ish, you know, and one looked at another, and he said, "Oh well, they were sighted." And he said to our colonel, which I was standing quite close, colonel said, "Who's in charge of this weapon pit here?" So the colonel said, "Lieutenant so and so over there." He was with that. Well, he said, "I'd like you to inform you that, well, I think it's situated wonderfully." So of course off goes the colonel to tell him. See, and the Duke of Kent stood there, and I followed the colonel. The colonel was telling what the Duke of Kent said. He said, "It'd be all right if we had real ammunition in these guns, wouldn't it? As we only had practice ammunition."
Were you short of ammunition?
We must have been terribly short. That was anti-tank guns.
Any other incidents you remember from being in East Kent?
Well, there was one where I think you may be interested. We were very, very short of cigarettes. So we used to do what we call a cigarette run almost every day. And known by our officers, and we'd go around with a track and we might get 20. We knew the little shops and let's have about 20. Because we never had no rations at all. No rations of cigarettes. So we'd done this, coming back from one run, and I looked behind me, there were some military police behind me on motorbikes. So they called me in. And by the way, I had our second in command of the MT with me and Mr. Crookshanks. And he says, what are they stopping you for, Brian? I says, I might have been speeding. He said, you weren't speeding, but I said, oh no, sir, was I? Because he said, I didn't think you were. So anyway, these two red caps, they sort of pulled alongside on their typical police, you know, said that they thought we were speeding. I'll never forget this, Captain Crookshanks says, don't you usually stand to attention when you speak to an officer, because they couldn't see him sitting in the lorry, that he had his pips on his shoulder. See? So I said, sorry, sir. So he said, well, what's the trouble? He says, your driver was speeding, sir. He says, I don't think he was. So he says, well, yeah, and anyway, he says, have you tested your speedometer lately? They said, no, sir, not today. So then he said, I should like to say, he said, ours has been tested. Or he said, I don't think it had, mind you. He said, I should like to test them. So he said to me, he says, Brian, he said, get to 30 as quick as you can. He says, when you get to 30, he said, pull in and stop. I said, right, so with that, he said to these policemen, he says, I'm going to get up to 30, he says, and then he said, I want to see what you're. So he goes, he stops them both. He said, no, I want you to be separate. So he had one for. And he said, I done exactly 30, stop. He said, of course, it's impossible to do my speed at that, wasn't it, really, when you think of it? So he asked one what he was doing. I think he said 38 or something, and the other one was doing 45 or something. So when he says, well, he says, you can't agree yourselves. What? I said, so it must be wrong. Anyway, they said, sir, we're carrying on with the charges. So I was duly charged in front of the CO. So it was all, they had this long parchment, the two military policemen did what they'd done. And anyway, Mr. Crookshanks said, we'll do this. He was a very clever man. He said, now he went back. He said, by the way, Brian, he said, we stopped at these traffic lights, didn't we? I said, yes, that's right. He said, we turned left here. I said, that's right. And he said, they stopped us within 300 or 400 yards. He said, well, it's impossible to get the speed up in one of these tracks, wasn't it? I said, yes, sir. I agreed to everything he said. So we goes in front of the colonel. And I said what I said. And then he said, Mr. Crookshanks says, well, my driver's perfectly right, so he says, we didn't speed, and he said, and that was it all about it. So I should never get the colonel of the regiment. He says, he stood up, he says, I would rather take the word of men of the Hampshire Regiment than CMPs, he said, or quorum of the treaty. He said, case dismissed.
So nothing more was heard?
Nothing more was heard of that. So I thought it was a rather lovely little story.
Did you have to go on coastal defence yourself?
Yes, oh yes, yes.
What did that involve?
Only slit trenches all round. We had our weapon pits and slit trenches. And then my big job on in 1940, when it was very, very, no, 1940, 41 now it'd be, January 41. It was very, very cold and snow and everything was about. And my job every morning was to take a truck from Birchington to Herne Bay, that way, on the coastal road, to make sure it was passable by snow and that our outposts was all right. Well, see, the outposts could have been, we did have little skirmishes with the Germans coming over. They used to do that sort of thing during the night and go away. So we So we never knew when we was going to be attacked at all the way through. Because there were some lovely sandy beaches through Herne Bay and Margate, as you realise.
The Germans used to mount raids?
They did once or twice, not very often.
What happened on these raids?
Nothing very much. None of our men were ever captured. We sort of got a... But it was all hearsay. You never come, you know, real, not with our own people. But anyway, I had the job of taking these patrol to make sure that everything was all right every morning. And it was these open trucks, they were very, very cold.
And you thought the Germans would invade?
Oh yes, we thought they would.
And did you feel confident that you would give a good account of yourself?
Oh yes, I don't think when you were in a good battalion and a good division, right the way through the war, I never thought we'd lose, you know, even in when things was bad in Burma later on. You know, it's one of those things I don't think the ordinary soldier ever thought. Mind they did say what a shower it is, you know. But I don't think they really meant it.
What happened next?
Now, what do you mean, Neil?
What do you recollect happening next to you?
Well, in Bergenden, down in Bergenden.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you another lovely little story. We that part of Kent was taken over by the military, and the civilians weren't allowed. If they got in, they weren't allowed out, and in the end, they weren't allowed in. So it was all military down in Margate, and everybody was stopped by our troops. Anybody coming into that part of Kent was stopped by the troops and sent back, or had to show their papers that they lived there. So anyway, one of our corporals, he just got married, and he said he'd like to fetch his young wife down to Margate. So we arranged that I would meet the train at Canterbury with my transport, find his wife, smuggle her into the back of my truck, and take her down to Margate, where we'd already arranged. And actually, it went off absolutely perfect. I went to Canterbury Station. This young lady I'd never seen in my life got off. I walked up to her and she was expecting to see me. And I said, well, I've got my truck. He's in the corner over there. I said, we'll just walk you and we'll walk in there quietly. I said, and I'll drive them. Our own patrols and their own guards was on the roads and they never took no notice of me driving in and out. And I drove her to Margate. And that was a Corporal Ferris, George Ferris' wife. So I'd done my little duties for them, I think.
So this would have been about early 1941?
Yes, this was early 41, yes. Yes, definitely. And we stayed there a year, all around that coast.
Was it a happy or an unhappy time for you?
Well, unhappy time because it got boring. This is one of the reasons why... While I was there, I done two courses in the mechanics and passed them both, which made me a mechanic, which was, now I'm a specialist in the, which is a, you know, a specialist, and I've got extra pay for that. And this comes to where I left the Worcester, left the Hampshires to go to the Worcesters because it was all so boring, you know, day after day, we're there and then we'd been there 15, 16.